my muscles stiff and hurting. Lay the shotgun across my knees and peer between the tree trunks at the house laid out in front of us. The flashlight beam is getting stronger, catching some of the reeds, turning them translucent. I squint, my blind eye throbbing. I think I can make out the shape of a person, but whoever it is, they're bent over, moving slowly. Is that Welch?
Lift your end higher,
comes Welch's voice. I jump. She sounds so close. But who is she talking to? Byatt? It feels like forever. But finally Welch steps out from the last of the trees into the moonlight. She's hunched over something, and there's someone else with her. Their face in shadow until they straighten. And it's Taylor. Taylor, who left boat shift. And I guess this is why. And between them, carried between them, a body bag. I clap my hand over my mouth, muffle the whimper that slips out of me. No. Oh, no, no. This isn't how it's supposed to go. We're gonna make it, she said. She promised. Maybe it's not her, I think wildly. Or maybe they knocked her out and she's alive in there, waiting for me to save her. I can't give up until I know.
This would be easier with the third, you know,
Taylor says as they set the body bag down among the reeds. It's not moving. Whoever's inside isn't moving, and I can't let myself think about what that means.
Oh?
Says Welch.
And who are you going to ask? Carson's a pain in the ass, and Hetty's not an option.
But before I have a chance to wonder what that means, Taylor says,
How's she working out?
I go rigid. This is it. If Welch knows I'm onto her, everything's over. My life here, this new thing with Reese that I'm nervous to name. Welch just shrugs.
Well enough,
she says, and I muffle a shaky sigh of relief.
But not well enough for this.
What about Julia, then?
Taylor says.
I'd rather not.
For a moment, Welch sounds as young as she is.
I don't think she likes me very much.
Taylor lets out a laugh.
If you don't like Carson, Julia doesn't like you.
I missed you out there,
Welch says. She turns off the flashlight, shoves it into her jacket pocket. I watch her pause to spit out a mouthful of what must be blood.
It's not the same without you.
I can do more good this way,
Taylor says. I want to shake her for it. There's nothing good about this.
After what happened to Mary, she deserved better, you know? They all do.
Mary, Taylor's girlfriend, who went vicious and wild like the animals. Taylor was the one who had to kill her. And the rumor was it broke her. But now I know it didn't. It just made her into something worse. Welch steps back to the body bag. And for a second, she stops there, hands on her hips, looking down at it. Moonlight skittering off the ocean, throwing her face into shadow, and I can't make out her expression. But there's a slump to her shoulders, almost like defeat.
I really thought we'd got it right this time, she says at last. You know, she seemed like she was okay.
Well,
Taylor says,
evidently she wasn't.
I knew. Of course I knew, the body bag motionless in the grass. But it's something else hearing it out loud. The pines around me hemming in, closer and closer. And Taylor joking like it doesn't matter. Like she hasn't just torn the whole world down. Reese pulls me against her chest, holds me tight. It's the only thing keeping me together.
All right,
Welch says.
Let's finish up.
They pick up the body, and Reese grips my hand as we watch them carry it into the house. Pain shoots up the inside of my arm, a sparking and twitch, and I try to pull away until I realize it's me. Holding on to her so tightly, her scaled fingers have cut deep into my skin.
Come on,
Reese says, her voice cajoling in my ear.
She's alive, right? She's by it. She gets through everything.
I nod, but there's somebody in that body bag. And I don't know how much longer I can do this.
how much longer I can keep hope burning in my heart.
I lose sight of Welch and Taylor as the house swallows them up, and then I catch a sliver of Welch's face through the gaps in the walls, the beam of the flashlight bouncing off the white bark of the birch.
"Let's put her down," Welch says, "before my arm falls off."
I bite my lip to keep myself from calling out, "Her! This is real."
"Where are they?"
says Taylor. She must mean whoever was on the other end of that walkie call.
"They'll pick her up," Welch says. "We can leave her here."
"What about..." There's a fizzing sound, and then the house bursts with red. Through the holes torn in the wall, I can see Welch holding a flare, the bloodlight harsh and sparkling.
"This should keep the animals back," she says.
I shift to one side to get a good look as she wedges the flare into the branches of the birch. I hear Taylor's voice from inside the house.
"Is that it, then?"
A pause, and I squint into the dark. Welch is facing the birch, peering at something on its trunk. She's quiet for a beat too long, and then she turns back to where Taylor must be standing.
"That's it,"
she says.
"Let's get back."
"Wait," Reese whispers, like she knows I'm only a few seconds away from dashing into the house and tearing open the body bag. "Just a little longer." Welch comes tramping out of the house with Taylor close behind. Taylor looks like she's about to be sick, and against my will, I feel a pang of pity. Maybe she didn't ask for this, but then neither did I. They head off down the path, and I track their flashlight beam through the trees, smaller and fainter until I can't see it anymore. I stand up, branches cracking underfoot. I don't wait for Reese, just snatch up the shotgun and make a break for it across the reeds. I don't know how long we have before the others show up. I won't lose my chance. Into the red light of the house, there's the body bag, tucked at the base of the birch, black plastic and rubber. I stop short, the shotgun falling to the ground. This is it. The end. Or something starting. Carefully, I step around the edge of the body bag and kneel down next to it. Think of the last time I saw by it, how I bent over her just like this, how she looked at me like she needed me. "Please," I think, and I reach for the zipper. The plastic peeling back, the zipper catching, my hand shaking, and there, pale, sallow skin, ink-dipped fingers, and curling red hair. Mona. A sob shatters out of me. I pitch forward onto my hands, gasping. "It's not her. Not her, not her, not her."
"Hetty?"
Reese comes up behind me, lays a hand on my back. I close my eye, my whole body trembling with relief, and I think if I stood up, my legs might collapse under me. "It's Mona," I say. "As sorry as I am, I can't hold back a smile, and I don't want to."
"Shit,"
Reese says.
"Where the hell is Byatt, then?"
She crouches down next to me and starts zipping Mona back up. But I'm not watching Mona's bloated face disappear. No, I'm looking at something else. There, on the trunk of the birch tree, where Welch was looking before she left, I stand up, step over Mona's body. The bark is curling, light from the flare casting long, strange shadows, but I can see it. Carved faint and unsteady, but I recognize it. B.W. Byatt Windsor. "She was here," I say. "It's the best thing in the world. Relief, sweet and soothing. Look, she was here and she was alive." I wait for Reese to tell me I'm wrong, to remind me how things usually go, but she doesn't. Just rests her chin on my shoulder, her cheek tilted against mine. The birch bark is smooth, and my fingers leave trails of blood behind from where Reese's silver hand punctured my skin. "Do you think she misses us?" I say. I'm aching for it, for the day I'll hear Byatt tell me she wanted to come home as much as I wanted to find her. A moment, and then Reese steps away from me into the shadows. I turn to face her. "Of course she misses us. That's all Reese has to say. But she only looks at me and doesn't say a word." I raise my eyebrows.
What? The flare light catches on the curve of her mouth as she smiles.
You don't really want an answer to that question.
No, come on. Maybe I'm goading her, but I can't stand the way she's looking at me, like she knows something I don't. Say it.
I guess you know a different Byatt than I do,
Reese says, shoving her hands into her pockets.
Because I'm not sure she ever missed anything in her life.
We're her best friends, Reese. I blink back the sudden sting of tears, feel them catch and freeze on my eyelashes. She can't be right. What has all this been for if Byatt doesn't want to come back to us? Her best friends. Don't you think that matters to her?
Well, Reese says, and there's an edge to her voice, a warning. Let's not pretend. It was the two of you, and then me, and that's fine. Because people are messy, and that's how it goes. But let's not pretend.
Shame curdling quick. Because she's right. And I hate that I'm proud of it. Proud of how much closer I got to buy it than she ever did. But I'll never tell her that. I think it's pretty selfish of you, I say instead, to be pissed about that when Byatt is God knows where, suffering through God knows what.
I'm not pissed, she shrugs. It's just true, that's all.
I should never have brought her. I should have known she wouldn't understand.
Why are you even here?
I snap. Around us, the patchwork walls of the house pressing in, the birch looming, Byatt's initials traced in blood.
Why did you come at all?
Reese doesn't answer, but I can hear it all the same. Everything about her. The sorrow buried in her eyes, the tightness of her mouth, all of it screaming the same thing. For you, Hetty. It's too much. I can't even say I never asked her to, because I did. I did. Over and over again. I'm doing this for Byatt. And Reese is doing this for me. Fuck.
I need some air, I say.
I stumble out the back of the house into what used to be a small square of yard. Around me, racks are irises, their stems crumbling underfoot, and I think of the vases full of them that we kept everywhere at school, their petals blackening as they fell, of the dried bouquet tucked up among the pictures on the mantelpiece of the Harker house, her parents' wedding bouquet. Reese told me that the first day we visited. Even after her mom left and they cleared out all the pictures, she kept that. Was it really so clear to her that it was me and Byatt first and her second? Even with how badly I've always wanted Reese closer? That didn't change the fact that Byatt was the one who waited for me at breakfast every morning. Byatt was the one who cut my hair and showed me which side to part it on. Byatt was the one who put the bones in my body. I drop down onto the porch, cradle my numb hands to my mouth, and breathe the feeling back into them. Byatt is what matters right now. She's the only thing. Soon the people on the other end of the walkie will show up to collect Mona. Wherever they take her, that's where Byatt will be. And I'll find a way to get there. I'm expecting Camp Nash, where the Navy and the CDC are headquartered. And it turns my stomach to think of Byatt taken off Raxter. I never knew her off the island. The closest I ever got to it was that day on the ferry across from the mainland, when I first saw her. Sea laid out behind her, and Raxter on the horizon, her hair unfurling in the wind. When I find her on the mainland, will she still be my Byatt? A noise from inside the house. I leap to my feet, grab the shotgun. Somebody's talking. Somebody who isn't Reese. I barrel into the house. Nobody here but us.
You heard that? Reese says, and I nod.
Welch coming back, maybe?
Or someone from Camp Nash? It sounded different, she says. Familiar, I don't know.
There. I point out through the shattered walls into the trees, where something else is moving, coming our way. The shape of a man.
Chapter 14. I raise the shotgun. Too dark to see a face, but there's something familiar about the build of him. Something that stays my finger on the trigger.
Hello?
I call. No answer. But he's closer now, almost to the house. I can imagine it as he steps up onto the porch, the shape of him warped by the old glass in the windows at Raxter, the sound of his voice over the hum of a lawnmower, and then he's through the doorway, a soft creak as he crosses the surviving floorboards, and he's lifting his head, and there's a tear in his shirt and a cut on his cheek. But I know him. Even in the dark, I'd know him anywhere.
Dad?
Reese breathes. It's Mr. Harker. Until he eases into the red glow of the flare light, and it isn't anymore. Oh, God. My voice sounds strange, muffled and far away. Reese, I'm so sorry. Because it's his face, and it's his body. But I don't think anything else is left. His skin bleached and pulling. His mouth sprouting roots. Branches burrowing in ears and under fingernails and slinking down his arms. And unblinking. Eyes still his. Pupils blown wide as he watches us. More than a year out here, alone with the tox. What did we expect?
No, Reese is saying. I grab hold of her arm, haul her back a few steps.
She's barely on her feet, and she stumbles, collapses to her knees.
No, Dad!
But he's not here anymore.
We have to go, I say. Come on, Reese, now.
He looks at me, cocks his head as he opens his mouth, takes a long, rattling breath, black, splitting teeth, and a nest of green at the back of his throat. The air musty and sour, so pungent I can taste it. I lift the shotgun, get ready to aim, but Reese shoves me away, looks up at me with a feral light in her eyes. Behind her, Mr. Harker advancing, step by step, vines unspooling from his mouth.
Don't you dare, she says,
and her voice breaks open, raw underneath.
Please, I say, we have to run.
It's too late. A vine writhes up Reese's legs, along her spine, and another curls around her arm, jerks it back. A cry and a crack of bone. Her right shoulder pops, hangs wrong in its socket. I lunge for her, grab my knife from my belt, slash once, twice at the vines holding her. Mr. Harker shrieks, rears back, and drags her with him.
Eddie!
Reese yells. The shotgun. But when I fire into the heart of him, it makes no difference. He only roars and pulls tighter on Reese's arm, winds a vine around her throat and starts to squeeze. I could run. I could save myself and get back past the fence, back to the house. All I've got is my knife now. And what good is that against Mr. Harker? But there's no choice to make. I break for him. Duck the thickest vine as it swings around. Feel the thorns rip down my back, and there he is. I crash into him, and we tumble to the ground. Dirt in my mouth, the scrape of bark against my skin. My knife knocked from my hand, and I scramble for it across the damp earth. A vine locks around my ankle, yanks me onto my back. I graze my knife with my fingers, but it's too far. I can't, and he's pulling me away.
Reese, I call, get it!
But I can't find her. Can't see anything but the looming dark as Mr. Harker bears down and his bruised hands, spongy with rot, close around my throat. I thrash, try to throw him off me, and his grip only tightens. Branches snake around my waist, holding me down, and one slithers up my neck, wrenches a scream for me as it hooks around my jaw and pries my mouth open. It's bitter on my tongue, and I'm choking, scrabbling at Mr. Harker's bloated face. His skin peels off like strips of paper, gathering under my nails, soft and pulpy.
Hey!
I hear Reese yell. For an instant, the pressure lessens before Reese's silver hand flashes above, the knife deep in his shoulder, and she slams into her dad, sends him reeling back onto the ground.
Quick! I say, pin him!
But Reese is just looking at him, her mouth open. She's no use, not anymore. I throw myself down, trap Mr. Harker's ribs between my knees, and pin him to the ground. He roars, muscles straining, and he's looking at me. I know he is. Me and Reese's dad, face to face. I cry out as his body surges up, the bristle and spray of branches, thorns scoring a gash down my arm. I get a good grip on my knife, pull it out of his shoulder, and plunge it into his chest, flesh splitting and rising like foam. Bile bubbles up between my lips, trickles down my chin as I work the blade, widen the rip in his skin. "Don't!" Reese cries from behind me. But I can't listen. It's not him anymore. I lean hard, brace my hand on his elbow as I wedge the knife deeper and deeper and start to lever it up. There's a heart to all this. There has to be. Black and blood weeping down over my fingers. Knife blade duller than I thought, but I've got a seam opening in him and he's getting weaker. Smaller roots are snapping, breaking away. At last I rip the knife out, toss it aside, and dig through his shredded skin. He's rotting from the inside out, tissue mottled with mold. The smell so sour and stinging that my eye is watering. Something scuttles up my jacket sleeve, first one and then another and another, and in the red light of the flare I can make out the gleam of 100 wingback beetles crawling out of the wound. I choke back a yell, and before I can move, a vine slinks up my back and knots around my neck, squeezing tighter and tighter, splinters jabbing sharp, pain spilling across me in waves. But he's weak now, blood pouring out of him. I grip the vine and break it in two, fling myself back at him, his face pulling apart as his mouth opens wider and wider. I shove my hand deep into his chest again, bear down with my whole body until I hit what I think is bone. But a glimmer of the flare light, and they're not bones. They're branches, spindled ribs curving and crusting. I hook my fingers underneath them, wedge my knee under his chin and pull inch by inch. Until finally, a snap. And inside his ribcage, I see it. A beating heart, glossed in blood. Built from the earth, from the bristle of pine. And inside, there is something else, something more, something living. I don't think twice. Just claw at it with both hands, and it comes screaming out with a wet tear. Mr. Harker's eyes close. Everything goes limp. I let the heart fall from my shaking hands and bend to one side to throw up. When I'm finished, I sit back, spit slick down my chin. I wait for the guilt, wait for the gnawing in my stomach. After all, I know that feeling. Since boat shift, since buy it, I'm starting to think I'm built for it. But Mr. Harker is dead, and I'm not, and the guilt doesn't come. I did what I had to. I kept us alive. I get to my feet, my legs unsteady, hands numb as I find my knife and slip it back into my belt loop. We made it. If this was the worst the Wildwood could throw at us, it might be okay in the end. When I turn, Reese is there, her right shoulder hanging at an angle that makes me dizzy. "You okay?" I say. "We should fix that." She's looking past me to the wreck of her father. "You killed him," she says, her eyes hollowed out, her face drawn and pale. "You really did." She's in shock, that's all. She'll come back, realize there was no other way. "I had to save us," I say as gently as I can. "I'm sorry, but..."
"He's dead."
Voice flat. Everything that's her stripped out of it. It was us or him. She doesn't answer. So I step in close, push her braid off her injured shoulder. It doesn't look all the way dislocated, but when she tries to move it out from under my hand, the color drains from her face and she gasps. "We should take a look at this, yeah?" I say softly.
"I'm fine,"
she says, even as she sags against me, and I watch her close her eyes, feel her shaking.
"I had him back," she whispers. "I thought he was gone. And then I had him back.
It wasn't him.
He knew me."
She opens her eyes, and when they meet mine, the accusation in them is clear and sharp.
"You took him away."
"He was going to kill us," I say, frustration building. "I had to save us. Why doesn't that matter to her?"
"Better me than him," she flings back at me. "Better us than my father."
I don't know this version of her. Even at her angriest, Reese is always contained, always whole. But this girl, this Reese in front of me, is in pieces, edges torn, heart scattered. That's ridiculous, I say. I was supposed to let you die? I was supposed to sacrifice myself? Reese, that wasn't even your dad anymore. She pushes me away, injured arm hanging uselessly by her side. No, it was him. He was here. He wasn't. And my patience is gone, bled out of me. Look, you don't get to put this shit on me just because you're angry at yourself. For what? A stillness suddenly about her, and I know she's waiting for me to make a mistake, to say the wrong thing. Well, fine. Have it. Angry at yourself for helping me kill him. She looks stricken, but I don't stop. I'm not the only one who held that knife. Nothing for a moment. And then she smiles and says, "Fuck you, Hetty." My mouth drops open. She's hurt me before. But until right now, she's never seemed like she wanted to. "If this is what I get for saving your life," I say, "I should have let him take you." She laughs, a horrible flatness to it, and I wait for her to stop. But she doesn't. She bends over, braces her silver hand on her knee, and the sound keeps coming, ripping out of her like Mr. Harker's heart from his chest. "Reese," I say, because I need this to stop before it turns to something worse. But before I can say anything else, a noise rumbles through us, the growl of a motor coming nearer and fast. We both startle, Reese's laughter cutting off. It must be whoever Welch was supposed to meet. I make for the back door and peer outside. There's a boat drifting in at the dock, motor idling, and in it the ballooning shape of a person, proportions strange and obscured by a hazmat suit, like the doctors who came that first week of the talks, who took our temperatures and took our blood and disappeared into their helicopters and never came back. "Shit," I say, hurrying back to Reese. I grab the shotgun, take it under my arm. "We have to get out of here." Through the gap in the wall, I can see a billow of plastic as the person in the hazmat suit climbs out of the boat. If we don't move now, they'll see us, and they'll know we've broken the quarantine, and everything will fall apart. Reese shakes her head, stumbles away from me. "No," she says. Stubborn like always, at least that part of her is together. "I'm not leaving him." "Someone's coming," I say, and she's being so unreasonable. And I'm talking too loud, but I can't help it. "We have to go."
"I can't."
She's looking at her father, laid out on the ground, his chest open, heart still oozing next to him, black teeth gleaming darkly in the red light.
"He's all I have. I can't just..."
I snap, lock my arm around her waist and drag her away back toward the door. At first she fights, scratches at my hand with her scaled fingers, and it hurts. "But we have to go. Doesn't she understand? We have to leave." We stumble past the birch tree, past by its initials carved there. And at last she finds her feet and we're running. Out of the house, into the woods, through the pines growing tight and narrow, pushing farther and farther into the green. I can hear something behind us, but I can't look, can't do anything but keep on. The shotgun jabbing me in the ribs as we stumble forward. Crashing through the brush, loud and leaving a trail. Branches catch on my hair and pull up my clothes, and we'll look like a mess when we get home, but we'll get there. We will. Eventually we hit the road, the broad stretch of it a familiar relief. It's still dark, and we're far enough from the house that nobody can see, so I stop and turn to scan the woods behind us. No waxy gleam of the hazmat suit, no sound but us. "I think we're okay," I say. Reese doesn't answer. When I look down, she's dropped to her knees, clutching her injured shoulder and biting so hard on her lip, I'm surprised it hasn't split. "I thought you said you were fine."
"I am,"
she grits out, her breath coming slow and labored, her face paper white in the moonlight. I don't try to help her. The sting of her words is still fresh, and I got her out of that house after all. That's enough for now. "Get up. We have to make it back over the fence." We can't go through the gate, so we're heading for the north edge of the island,
where the fence ends in great brick columns at the lip of the cliff. We'll have to scramble up them and over the fence back onto school grounds. I know where we are now, and Reese is in no shape to be leading anybody anywhere. So I shoulder the shotgun, bend down, and pull her to standing. I'd carry her, but even if I could, I don't think she'd let me. Come on, I say. She's heavy against me as we stagger down the road. There's light snatching at the sky by the time we hit the fence. I can't bring myself to look up at the roof deck. If somebody's on gun shift, let them shoot us now and get it over with. But nobody does, and we follow the tree line where it presses up against the fence, branches yearning and straining through the iron bars, follow it to the edge of the island, sea spray whipping at my skin, pines pressing close on one side, the fence on the other, and out ahead the earth falls away. Just the cliff, granite worn by the wind, and a 20-foot drop to the water below. I glance up at the house. Every window dark. No lantern on the roof deck. Nobody's up looking for us. And nobody out on the horizon either. The ocean empty and endless. Waves breaking in ranks. The fence ends right at the lip of the cliff, forming a T with a thick brick column so big, so close to the edge that there's no way around it. Not for us, not for the animals. But there are scratches and teeth broken off in the mortar. It's not like they haven't tried to get through. Slowly, I drag Reese over and prop her up against the brick column. She's pale, her eyes glazed and staring. Hey, I say, shaking her lightly. I smooth my hand along her cheek. Her skin too cold, too pale. Shock, maybe. I remember the sound her shoulder made, the way she screamed. She needs more help than we can afford to get her. Come back, I try. Reese, it's me. She blinks, slow like it's the hardest thing she's ever done.
I'm so tired, she croaks.
I know. One last push, okay? Here, the iron bars in the brick hit at a right angle, and there are enough breaks worn into the brick that we should be able to find a few footholds to boost us up and over. I help Ree stand and turn her around. See? I say, pointing to one spot on the column, about knee-high, where some animal's torn a chunk out. Climb up. I'll spot you. Her right arm limp by her side, useless and wrong. But Reese is stronger than anybody I've ever met. And even after everything, she braces her injured shoulder against the fence, wedges her foot into the crack in the brick, and levers herself up with a muffled scream, her scaled left hand scraping the mortar loose, and I watch with a strange sort of pride swelling in my chest as she pulls her body over the fence. She's left scoring in the brick, and that makes it easier for me to follow her. Soon, I'm jumping down from the top of the column and landing with a groan on the battered lawn. School side this time. We're home. Reese staggers to her feet with a whimper. Even the glow of her hair seems dimmed, like the whole of her is draining away. You go upstairs, I whisper. I'll put the gun back in the barn and meet you there. She nods, and I think she's about to say something. An apology, maybe, for what she said at her house. But then she's turning around and drawing up her hood, the shape of her disappearing into the dawn. It was so easy sneaking to the barn that I kept looking behind me, waiting for Welch to step out of the shadows and press her pistol to my forehead. Yet nobody came. But if that was easy, this, Reese, this is the hard part. She's in our room when I get back, sitting on my bunk, clutching her injured shoulder. And for a second, I just watch her, watch the play of light on her skin. It was her life that fell apart out there, not mine. I have to be the one to put us back together. Hey, I say. You okay? She chuckles, shakes her head.
Okay?
Sorry. Stupid question. At least she's talking to me. I come farther into the room, shut the door behind me. Let me do something for your shoulder. She doesn't answer, so I step around her and reach for my pillow.
It still has a pillowcase, even though most of the others got stitched into makeshift blankets. I peel the pillowcase off and start ripping down the side seam. I don't think it's popped all the way out, I say. But that's not why she's angry, and we both know it. I'll make a sling, and you can just rest it for a bit. I help Reese cradle her right arm against her chest and loop the pillowcase around. I bend over her to make a knot in the sling and freeze when I feel her let out a shaky breath, her forehead leaning against my chest.
What the hell happened to him?
She whispers. I don't know, I say. He was out there a long time. And I want to say, he's not like us. The talk swallowed him whole, the way I've never seen it touch a Raxter girl. I take one more moment, brush my thumb against the nape of her neck, and then I drop onto the bed next door. Maybe we can get you a real bandage tomorrow, or some painkillers. She doesn't answer. I'm not even sure she's breathing. I can't let her disappear into herself. I can't let the talks win. I reach out, rest my hand on her knee, and squeeze. Just to reassure her. Just to remind her I'm with her. But she flinches away from me. Reese?
Don't,
she says. And I jerk back as she lurches to her feet, scrubs at her face with her silver hand.
Don't do that.
I'm sorry, I should have asked.
I mean all of it, she says.
And when she turns to look at me, it's like I can see it. The mask of calm she's wearing and the anguish underneath.
You have to stop, Hetty.
Okay, I say, holding up my hands. We just need to calm down and we will figure out a way to fix this. It's okay.
It's not, Reese snaps. It's not fucking okay.
She sounds so resigned, so close to giving up, and I feel a bright flare of panic because I can't lose her, too.
I don't know how any of this is supposed to work after what you did.
And no, I can't lose her, but there are only so many ways I can explain this, only so many times I can justify keeping us alive before I lose my grip. There was no other solution, I say. I'm struggling to keep steady. My fists clenched so hard I can feel my fingernails biting deep. It was him or us, and I made the only decision I could.
So what?
She says, acid dripping from her voice.
I don't get to be mad that my father is dead.
That the talks ripped him apart so badly you had to put him down? I shoot to my feet, and I don't know what it is. Anger or pure desperation that has me so wound up I'm shaking.
No, actually, I say. You don't get to be mad that I saved your life.
Reese narrows her eyes. I brace myself for whatever's coming next. I've never met anyone who likes fighting the way she does. Never met anyone so good at it. But the silence beats on. At last she lets out a long, slow breath, tension draining from her shoulders.
Do you think I want this? She says.
She sounds hoarse. And I can barely pick out one word from the next. Every ounce of exhaustion crashing down on both of us at once.
We don't get to choose what hurts us.
My heartbeat thundering in my ears. The slow coil of dread tightening in my chest. Please, please don't be doing what I think you are.
Reese,
I start, but she shakes her head.
I understand what you did. I think you did the right thing, and I'm still angry about it.
She shrugs her good shoulder.
What else is there to say?
For a moment, I'm back there in the dark, my life in my hands. There was no other way. It was kill or be killed. And it feels like tearing my own heart out of my chest the way I did Mr. Harker's, but I say, nothing, I guess. She nods. My stomach clenches as I see a tear wind down her cheek before she swipes it away.
Right. That's what I mean.
The past few days, I've seen her break open. Watching her now, I can see her closing back up. There, the familiar remove. There, the way she never quite looked at me in the eye. All of it put back together as she says,
"You can have the room. I'll bunk in one of the empty dorms."
She's waiting for me to argue. And if she were by it, I'd know what to say. I'd know the gap in her armor. But Reese doesn't have one. Okay. I'm proud when my voice doesn't break. But I can't let her go without making sure she understands. "I'm sorry," I say. "You have to know that." Her hair the only light. Features strange and unknowable like the day I first met her. She's gone. She's here, but she's gone.
"Yeah, I know."
And the door shuts behind her as she walks out.
Buy it. Chapter 15. They open the curtains and they wheel him in. Gurney across from me, both of us strapped in tight. And I know who it is. I do. It's just, I'm not here anymore. A fog in my head. I'm awash. I'm at sea. And I can't feel anything except when they stick me and bleed me. Teddy. That's who I forgot. "No boys allowed," I told him. I kissed him. I did. I ruined him. And I wasn't even trying to. "When will you learn?" my mother says to me. She is by the window again. She is watching me. And she is wearing scrubs just like the doctors do, as she winks in and out. "There are more important things than what you want," she says. "How are you feeling?" Me and Teddy on the roof. She's got a bandage covering her eye, and we're pretending like she doesn't. And I say, "How are you feeling?" And she says, "Doesn't hurt so much." And I'm glad. And then she looks over at me, and it's taking a little to get used to her new face. But she's used to it, so I have to be too. And she says, "You seem all right by it." All right. Like not just all right, but something more. Except I don't know what, so I just shrug and, I guess, that's what I say. Light. My eyes tearing up, they always do. They're too sensitive. I could never get my pupils dilated when I went to the eye doctor, and somebody bending down over me, blinking, and sharpen, and, Peretta. Shake my head, try to get away. But she says something I can't understand. And then, test. They're doing a test. My arm is moving. Try to put it back. Come back. I didn't. But no good. A hole. A tube and bright yellow hands pushing. Open my mouth to scream and scream. But nothing comes out. Just a whisper of air. And what is that in my IV? It's clear. It's coming down. It's going in. I can't stop it. Pull. Tighten. Stretch. And Teddy. Where is Teddy? There is something in me. Cool and sweet. He is not here. I am not either. A soft wash. Waves. The beach at Raxter, at the Raxter before the talks. I'm alone, but the kind of alone where you aren't. Where you can feel the other girls behind you running, laughing, chattering. And it's okay that you're by yourself on the beach. Because all you have to do is turn around, and there they'll be, but I don't turn around. In the water, there's a crab, still and bright, and I bend down so my knees break the surface. No canvas and denim, just the plaid skirt, all soft like I never stopped wearing it. The crab looks at me. I look at the crab. It floats up, floats out of the water, and lands in my hands, and it's dry. I'm dreaming. I'm not really there. And I know it. But I hold the crab up, and I look in, close at the gleam of the shell. And there I am, reflected in tiny pieces. 100 little versions of me. And they say, "Welcome home." And then, the crab twitching, and its claws turning black slowly. Slowly. And then the whole shell, until the body black, the legs black, my hands black, my arms black. I try to let go, but I can't. And around me, the water black, the shore black. And if I let go, I will disappear. If I lose this, I will disappear. I know it the way you know things in your dreams. Everything black. Everything. Everything and... Oh. Awake. It's quiet at first. My head, finally, clear. The ward empty. Nobody is coming. Maybe they have what they need. Or maybe they know they will never get it. Hey. I try to lift my head, and there's Teddy, propped up in bed. Skin dull and drained, but smiling, wearing a pair of scrubs, so white it hurts to look at him.
They tried another cure,
he says.
A virus that might kill whatever you have. But your body fought it off.
I'm staring at the ceiling again when he says,
"Whatever we have." I mean, whatever we have.
After a while, he gets up, crosses to my side of the room, and undoes my restraints. No need for them now. We both know that.
Okay,
he asks. I nod. Open my mouth and tap my throat.
Hang on.
He finds the whiteboard in the cabinet, gets in bed alongside me, helps me wrap my fingers around the marker, and we ask questions we will never have time for. What's your last name?
What?
You know mine.
It's Martin.
You know what they say about men with two first names?
No.
Me neither. It takes about an hour, I think, for the signs to come back. And when they do, they turn him sweaty and make him shake. They draw dark lines under his eyes, and they empty him out. What hurts? He groans, rolls up onto his hands and knees and vomits over the side of the gurney. Black liquid. Something grainy to the texture. I put my hand on his shoulder.
I'm fine.
But he isn't. And he never will be. And I reach under the gurney, press the call button with shaking fingers.
It's no use,
he says.
They won't come.
I don't ask how he knows. It gets worse. He goes limp like his bones aren't in him anymore. Like Gabby, from the youngest year who never survived her first. I kneel, help him take my spot propped up against the pillows. When I lay my hand across his forehead, he pulls away. I didn't think it would happen to you. He shuts his eyes and leans his head back. The skin of his throat is new and young, soft when I press my fingertips to the crest of his collarbones.
Sure.
He says. And it's the last thing for a long while. I write them while he's sleeping. over and over across the whiteboard. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. When he wakes up, I show him, and I take his hand, press his palm over my heart. Beat and beat. And at last he relents, and shuts his eyes and slumps against me. What I meant, what I wanted, they don't matter anymore. We're here, and that's the rest of our lives. The second flare-up ties him in knots, and when it's over, I can't touch him without feeling a static shock. He is crying. I feel like crying, too. But I know it would turn into a ragged kind of laughter. I can see faces in the windows. Sometimes Peretta. Sometimes a nurse whose face seems familiar, even behind her mask. They are watching, waiting for it to end.
Tell me something,
Teddy says, the last of it ringing out of him. What?
Anything.
I think back to the day I met him, the questions he asked. I write down the price of milk. He tries to laugh.
Something else,
he says. By the time the third flare-up comes, I have torn the bottom of my hospital gown to bits and use it to wipe bile from the corners of his mouth. Someone is in the window, and Teddy is lying down, and I am next to him, and my hand is cramping as I write out a joke I heard my father tell once. I notice his finger first, the index finger. A twitch, a pulling so small, you wouldn't see it if you hadn't spent almost a year and a half on a roof looking for it. But I did. It makes me scramble away, and I wish it didn't. But I huddle at the far end of my bed, try not to make any noise. I remember how it can go. I remember what it makes you do when it doesn't want your body anymore. His eyes flick open, glassy and bright. Beautiful. And for a moment, he's just Teddy. Just a boy. But then he speaks.
Hello,
he says. Empty. No recognition waiting underneath. He's trying to get up, trying to crawl his way over to me, and if he does, he will hurt me without meaning to. I am worried I will let him. It is the strips from my hospital gown that do it. They are long, and he knots them together, makes them longer, smiling, his mouth open. Something starting to move behind his teeth, shadowed, delicate, and there, a vine crawling out from inside him to curl around his lip, like the kind that slink across the fence at Raxter, like the kind that drape from tree to tree, his hands tying a rope like they aren't his anymore, and more vines. Another and another, branching and winding in a black tangle, blood leaking from his mouth, from his ears, reaching for me, like they're looking for a new home. I start to know what the rope is for, but I don't do anything. I sit so my legs are tucked under me. I watch the tox go to work, on his knees. A rope into a noose. His eyes never close. His grip never changes. He is pulling right until the end. Chapter 16. There is not enough difference between the white of the wall and the white of the floor. I am having trouble keeping them what they are. There is a stain on what I think is the floor, and it is a little ways away from my foot. I am watching the edges of it come and go. There is a sound in the room. I am having trouble telling what it is. This is with my eyes closed. A cut on my left ankle, about as long as my thumb. A bruise rotting down from my right kneecap. Nothing on my thighs. Only a tenseness inside them. At my hips, three indents in the skin where the strap has pressed. A patch rubbed pink on my ribs. The IV marks on my hand. My wrists are clear since they started using the softer restraints. More bruising up by my throat. A red welt on my cheek from the branches in the woods at Raxter. With my eyes open, there would be more. They come in to move the body. The body, that's what I'm saying instead of, you know. Three people, their faces covered. They pick the body up. They put it in a bag.
Did she do that to him?
One of them says.
Nah,
says the other.
You should have seen it. Kid did it himself. Not sure there was anybody home anymore, if you know what I mean.
That's what the tox does when it doesn't want you. Like the twins, Emily and Christine. Like Taylor's girlfriend, Mary. You were watching, I want to say. You must have seen.
How come she hasn't done it yet? Dr. Peretta says it's her hormones. Says they help her get along with it a little better.
They carry the body out. I stay. I am sitting, and there is red on the soles of my feet. I'm not looking at anything. No. No, I'm not looking at anything. I will never look at anything again. I expect them to move me. I expect them to put the IV back in my arm, to do up the restraints again. But nobody comes, and nobody minds when I move to the empty gurney next to mine. When I sleep, he is there. When I wake, he is there too. When it's my turn, it is only Peretta. I roll over, close my eyes. But she uncurls my limbs and sits me up. An oxygen tank waiting by my bed, tubing and mask bright yellow.
Well,
Peretta says.
I'm awfully sorry.
Nothing to say to her. I just stare and stare even when she puts the whiteboard in my hands. She sits down on the edge of the gurney. Teddy gone. And she is covered from head to toe, skin showing only around her eyes. When she reaches out, I let her. Let her push my hair off my face, wipe the crusted spit from the corner of my mouth.
I brought you something,
she says. From one of the pockets in her plastic suit, she pulls out a Raxter iris. A little bit crumpled, the stem splitting, but the petals are still blue. It's still alive.
You liked them downstairs, I think. So, here.
She gives it to me, and I cradle it in my palms. Indigo drape and the barest spots of yellow hidden at the center. Hetty used to pick them for me during the summers and tuck them in my hair.
Listen, Peretta says. We can't stay here anymore.
There's Teddy, and something happened at your school, and our study's been ended.
I'm sorry I can't help you.
I think she's waiting for me to absolve her. Instead, I close my eyes and hold the iris up to my nose. Sweet, and something of salt. Of Raxter.
All right,
I hear her say. And the wheels of the oxygen tank squeak as she rolls it closer.
You just have to breathe, okay? It's as easy as that.
I keep my eyes shut as she slips the oxygen mask over my nose, tightens the straps so it stays in place. Doesn't bother strapping my hands down. Keeps her touch gentle and soft. She knows there's no fight left in me. A moment. And then a hiss, a valve releasing. I look at Peretta, and I make sure she's watching as I breathe deep, and I let it in.